Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and terrible accents. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow Security Council members. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
You would not know that you were from the Boston area.
I'm not very good at the Boston accent.
Apparently.
Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Man, I could have done with some of Baywatch gummies when I was watching this one.
The key is whenever I do a JFK impression, it's always an impression of the character JFK from the animated show Clone High.
Mm.
So you have to start with the like, potty platter.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of roll from there. But it is the Kennedy accent is a distinct subset of the Boston accent.
This guy could have used some lessons.
Yeah, the guy, the slightly Ed Helms looking guy.
Yeah, like a weird pick. I mean, that was the best one you could find.
He didn't even look like him.
Like, not really. Yeah. It was not great.
But
it's like you can get away, you can get away with squint, Bobby, and I'm like, maybe like the ears. Not looking much like Bobby, but...
Yeah. Yeah,
JFK.
Maybe the ears a little bit. Maybe the eyes.
It was, CW budget version of JFK.
Yeah, really was.
This guy was not going to be getting it on with Marilyn Monroe. That's for sure.
That's probably true. All right, we are here to recap Legends of Tomorrow, Season 6, Episode 4, entitled Bay of Squids. And I have drawn the short straw to bring it down to DEF CON 1 this week.
What do you mean you drew that? Don't lie to the readers. We just argued about this. You argued your way into doing the recap.
I know, and that is the short straw. That's how it works.
I mean, you volunteered, and now you're making it seem like we're putting it on you.
Guy, are you unfamiliar with the concept of a show whereon we put on a pretense to... okay, fine.
Anyway,
we open in Cuba circa 1962, where we think there's an incoming nuke, but of course it's just a pod with something on board. On the Wave Rider, Nate runs into Zari without makeup, which stirs up feelings for him. Spooner is working out while Bayrod is totally conked out on cannabis gummies that Gideon has made for him. But Rory has brought everybody in, and he's dressed up. He's in a suit. He's sober. He's got a lead on Sarah from a redacted KGB file. Side note, Putin gets ousted in 2044, so I guess we've only got another 23 years to wait or so. They basically show up to intercept a transportation convoy. They don't bother to pick up John and Astra, and they forget Bayrod on the ship. This is going swimmingly so far. They're also all in their pajamas, because even though it's a time machine, as Spooner points out, Zari reminds her, we don't ask those kinds of questions.
I do like that they hang a what is it? You hang a lamp on it, right?
A lampshade.
Well, I like that they're just like, yeah, this is not the show to worry about that kind of stuff.
Which we're not going to deal with those problems, which is just as well in this week's episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, guys? You're going to feel right at home this week because we have a truck heist.
Yay!
As they steal a truck.
Yep.
Sadly, it does not contain a alien pod, but instead a Soviet warhead, and they realize they are in Cuba right in the middle of the missile crisis. They have forgotten also to cloak the ship, so when JFK gets his spy shots, they think there's a new Soviet bomber. Nate and Zari head to Washington to defuse tensions there. Well, Rory and Spooner are sent to return the nuke to Russia. Bayrod and Ava try to infiltrate the camp as a Russian doctor who studies aliens. Spooner and Rory are basically caught by the Cubans, who take the warhead. In the Oval Office, Zari pretends to be a Southern secretary rather seamlessly, and Nate joins the Harvard Brain Trust. And he tries to work his way out with football analogies about old Ivy League football games. Ava gets scrubbed into vivisection, and Bayrod is squeamish about blood and leaves when she cuts them open and starts bleeding silver. Creepy. She disconnects a hose. Out in the hallway, Bayrod dons a beret. It's Bayrod's beret, everyone, and our new recurring segment, Hat Talk. And is mistaken for Che Guevara and brought to Castro, where he pretends to be Che's cousin, Jay.
It's like, he's a much better Che Guevara than the guy he is Kennedy.
He's way better.
Oh, yeah.
It's basically spot on. Yeah. So.
The ambassador from Russia calls JFK about losing a missile. They also have spy pics of Nate all steeled up. And our general reveals that DARPA had a program to turn flesh into steel. So everybody thinks it's like a super soldier. The general wants to launch a preemptive strike, and Nate is trying to talk him down. Meanwhile, the medical staff has overdosed on laughing gas, letting Ava sort of get out with the alien. Castro tells Bayrod that he has a nuclear weapon, and Bayrod freaks out and starts eating his gummies, which Castro now wants some as well. Spooner can hear the alien talking. It's pissed off. It wakes up and basically attacks Ava. Mick and Spooner save her. Back of Castro, Bayrod offers to mellow him out by playing a song, which is Cat Stevens' Peace Train. Unfortunately, it doesn't really work internationally, as U.S. is going to DEFCON 3. Castro storms out eventually and is confronted by the alien, who he believes has been sent by the CIA to kill him. Ava and the rest of the team get back to the ship, realize they forgot Bayrod again. Castro is going to fire a nuke at DC, and the general wants to attack the USSR preemptively. They're DEFCON 2. They tell
why
the general...
Why is any of this happening? Why does Castro want to nuke anybody?
He's he doesn't want to be a pawn in the game, he said, anymore. He just wants to... He wants to do his thing. We don't ask those kinds of questions, guy. I think we established that earlier in this episode.
Yeah.
In the Oval Office, they tell the general Zari is a typist, and in one of a question I had a moment before they did the gag, Zari thumb types on the typewriter, and Che calls Castro, which means Bayrod is blown. He has to make a run for it. Rory and Ava have a face-off where Rory says, essentially, you shouldn't have cleaned me up. I'm better off being a goon killing people. And Ava's like, yeah, totally. That's what I need right now. Go kill the alien. Even though he doesn't want to, because it's their only lead to find Sarah. Back in the base, the alien is looking for something. It wants the nuke because it wants to go home. Mick taunts the alien, and Spooner sort of interprets and figures out the alien wants its own ship rather than this ship. And they make a deal, although the alien asks some question about the wave, what the Wave Rider uses for fuel. Castro launches the nuke. Meanwhile, back in the U.S., apparently everybody's on a three-day weekend because Zari retyped the orders she were given. General brings in the nuclear football, and they basically have a confrontation in the office, which involves Zari being taken hostage, and then a football game? there's a lot of back and forth. I'm not going to... It's not fight, but it's football.
Right.
Eventually, Zari catches the nuclear football with the wind power, and Nate intercepts it. The missile's incoming, and Nate talks JFK out of attacking the USSR in retaliation. The general runs outside with a gun to shoot the missile a bunch, which doesn't work out well for him because it lands on him, but it doesn't explode. Back in the office, there's a group hug, and Nate gets to hug both Bobby and Jack. Rory took the plutonium out of the warhead, which is why it didn't explode. On the way back to the ship, he pushes Spooner out of one of the time vortex windows. Ava apologizes to him, and as the alien upgrades the Wave Rider, Rory points out he's going to go after Zari alone because it's going to be quite a trip.
After Sarah alone.
Nate and Zari have a heart-to-heart about essentially whether or not Zari reminds him of the original Zari, and he says, now you just remind me of you, which is a sweet moment. The team is all stranded in the jungle because Mick has stolen the ship. They have a rundown of what happened. They stopped World War III with sports analogies and pot gummies, which they point out is very on brand. And when they try to figure out where to go, it's to Constantine's house. So they're going to go bother him and Astra. On the ship, Rory and the alien are like yelling at each other, mutually unintelligible, until the alien puts on a ring and ship shifts into a woman who then drinks Mick's beer. Wow, there's a lot going on
here. There's a lot going on here.
There are some pretty... But
they were still in 1962?
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to Constantine's house in 1962, which I assume is...
No,
some...
they have the little time vortex things. I mean, they don't even really need the ship.
Yeah, like, why do you need the ship?
They've got little wristwatch-sized time travel devices. You don't need a ship.
Yeah, I decided not to really worry about it. I figured they'll write some way around that. In the next episode.
Yeah, what? I mean, he's 40, right? So he basically doesn't exist in 62.
Yeah. Yes, presumably somebody else owns that house. Perhaps his parents? I don't know.
We've been in that house
we
before.
We have seen it. Didn't we see it in the past at one point?
Yeah, it was owned by somebody. Yeah. I forget who it was owned by, but yeah.
Yeah, I just decided to be like, well, whatever, it's a magic house, so maybe
yeah, and I thought about that too, right? So there might be some,
however it
yeah,
exists.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah. We'll figure it out. But there's so much that happens in this episode that is just very, like, you know, like, they just waltz into the White House, basically, and become part of the cabinet without showing any credentials whatsoever.
Yeah, not even the cabinet, but I was looking this up afterwards. I believe it was an organization called XCOM, which was essentially the executive committee of the National Security Council, basically Kennedy's advisors during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Okay. So, like, extra super,
yeah,
like, Security Council.
Like, I love this show, and I love the fact that it doesn't really worry about stuff like that. But it,
I mean,
every once in a while, you're kind of like, seriously?
I think we should just say that this one's a clunker, and, like, let's accept that so that we're not trying to be gentle
to it. The thing that's bothered me about, like, the last couple ones is what previous seasons have ridden on when they've been goofy and dumb like this has been, like, the heart part of it. You know, when we had like the camp episode and a number of others that where you're like, you're so caught up in the fact that they're nailing the characters that you don't care about the other stuff that's going on that's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't feel like they're hitting it so far this season. There was nice stuff in the first episode. I mean, there was the stuff about even Sarah was really great, but it doesn't seem like, I mean, this stuff with Mick, I don't even quite get what they're going for with
they're going back and forth on that. Like, okay, like when he shows up this week and he's sober and he's got a plan, I'm like, okay, so they kind of goofed him last week, but okay, we're gonna start moving again now.
Yeah.
But then they throw him under the bus again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I actually think they do a nice thing with Mick this week, which is he's trying to get, you know, basically get his head in the game.
Yeah.
And Ava gives him crap about it because, you know, I think it's mainly a bad reflection on her character, I think, because she goes back and forth. Whereas they need somebody to push back on Mick and say, like, now it turns out you are better off being a big, dumb brute. And I think they kind of slightly mishandle that. But in the end, it turns out that his plan is good. And he also is the one to make sort of the more slightly more heroic move at the end, right? Stealing the ship and going after Sarah. I think is a little bit, I like what they're trying to do, but I agree that it has occasionally been clumsily handled.
Yeah.
Yeah. As for the premise, I think they are best when they don't try to mix it up with real world actual events. You know, like, but we were just talking about this previously. X-Men First Class does this, the exact same Cuban Missile Crisis thing. But it fits it in a better way. Like, it doesn't feel quite so weird. Like, yeah, just walking into the Oval Office does not make any sense. And
yeah,
fine, Harvard, whatever. That's a weird gag. That football game is bananas. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Like, the way Castro is acting, I don't get it. Like, why is he going to nuke DC? Like, what is that going to solve? Like, there's also no nukes on the island yet. That they were on that's what the blockade was about. Anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I clearly should not be thinking about the actual crisis as I'm watching this. Right. That's bad. Yeah. But,
I think they don't have to
set it up like that.
Kind of, I mean, I laughed when it happened.
I think I've just been so exasperated that I was like, yeah.
Well, and it's got the strange choice, like the I don't know, the shooting the missile feels a little bit like almost Dr. Strangelovish, right, think, like riding the missile.
Yeah.
But it's a little weird. It's a physical gag, plus it lands in the Oval Office, like in the front yard of the White House, and you're like, well, this is changing history for sure. Like, you have definitely not smoothly, like, undone things. And I realize that the legends are about messing stuff up, but this feels like a pretty big change to the
it's
world
also
dynamic.
Not the way nuclear missiles work either. But let's not. They would still explode. But anyway, let's not.
Yeah,
let's not think about that too much.
So I will say there were things I liked. I enjoyed the end where Bayrod has his gummies and there's, you know, he offers them and Ava's like, nobody wants your drugs. He just goes, Mom. Yeah. I enjoy that dynamic. I enjoy them continually forgetting Bayrod in this episode, and I love him pretending to be Che Guevara and trying to play Castro into like a super mellow mood. I enjoyed all of that. I thought that was very funny.
I thought that was funny too.
That was good. Yeah. And I do like her thumb typing. That was a legit good gag.
Well, I sat there thinking, there's no way Zari knows how to actually type on a normal keyboard, right? Yeah. But that was a really well done gag that also makes sense with that character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what do you think about her, Nate?
I felt like maybe they started off thinking they were going to turn this into a love triangle with Constantine, but I think they actually they swerved out of that at the end by having them be.
I read it as
having them be friends, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. You're right. They could go either way with it, but I was hoping it would not be that, mainly because I would still love to see Zari 1.0 come back at some point.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. This show could easily do that in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. And Tala Ash might make the MVP this week because the gameness with which she dives into the Southern accent, I thought was fantastic. And she's always great. As we've said before, she always does a fantastic job of making us feel like this version of Zari is a totally different person from the last version.
Yeah. She's edging up to it a little bit, though, like the no makeup thing.
Yeah.
She came out a little more like 1.0 this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, because she wasn't so over the top. For a boner joke, fine, I guess. I mean, if you're gonna have one, I guess that was less offensive than it could have been. I don't know. I don't know what to think about their relationship. I did read it because he's looking at her all lovey-dovey, and she's like, "Oh, am I reminding you of her again?" And he's like, "No, you remind me of you," which. I read as he's starting to crush on her.
Possible. Certainly possible. Whatever.
We'll see.
I
don't think I need another CW love triangle.
How about some secrets? How about secrets here for that?
Yeah.
I think you hit upon something earlier when you were talking about when the show comes through and it's when it focuses on the characters over the plot. Yeah. And I feel like this week, the biggest issue is they feel a little scarce in terms of where do these characters want to go? Like, where are their arcs taking them, right? Like, what character issues do we have to work out? And so, you have a little bit of Mick trying to figure out how does he fit in without Sarah around. And then you have maybe Nate and Zari kind of working out some sort of relationship. But that felt like it was a little weird, right? Because we had a whole season's worth of them dealing with that. And it didn't feel like it was left terribly unresolved. But the rest of the characters, like Bayrod does not have like an arc yet, right? Like he has no character conflict or drama this season.
Right.
The closest we have, I would say, is introducing Spooner into the crew. And
it sort of annoys me, by the way.
Yeah, she's not my favorite. And part of it is I think they just haven't, they don't know what to do with her. Like she... Yeah. has a role in terms of her ability to talk to like the aliens and stuff, but we've only seen her interact a little bit with the rest of the crew. And I kind of liked where the dynamic was going with her and Mick, where she was trying to get him to be like, come on, like you're better than this, but it's not fleshed out enough.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't like her trick of happiness. Not that I'm trying to make a moral stand on this at all, but it's just kind of boring. You know, okay, I want to shoot aliens. Fine. And then she starts shooting at the Cubans for some reason. Why? I just didn't understand what the heck was going on at all, although it was a truck heist. I also don't understand why a guy stands in front of you with a flamethrower and you stop your truck. What? Just run him over.
You've never played the classic game, flamethrower, truck, rifle? Flamethrower beats truck, truck beats rifle, rifle beats flamethrower.
That's true, I did. Mm-hmm. I forgot the basics. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's definitely some muddling through this week. I think part of it is also that maybe now that they have gotten, and I'm assuming that the alien is Kayla, I'm not 100% sure of that, but I think so too.
I think it is, but it's hard to tell.
I think the credits in the IMDb suggest that it is. So okay. I'm going to, given that we have a dearth of those named creatures, I'm going to assume it's her. And maybe now that she is, you know, A, in human form and can interact with us, and B, has like a, you know, a direction to be going, maybe that sort of jumpstarts the plot a little bit. We also had zero Sarah this week. After leaving her
and Constantine as well,
and Constantine and Astra and Gary, like none of them appear. Yeah. And for a bit, I thought like we're gonna like not have Bayrod either, and just be like, all right, what is this, like a COVID thing? Like we could only have like five cast members in the same place or something. But yeah,
I don't know what to say. I still enjoy watching it. You know, yeah. I didn't, you know, it's not like, I mean, I've given up on The Flash. It's just, it's not even enjoyable anymore for me. Whereas this is still enjoyable for me. I mean, I still get some laughs out of it. And I think the fact that it's so, you know, over the top is part of what I like about it. And even the goofy stuff with them playing football and the, like, I find that kind of funny. And that's great, but it's not going that to that deeper level that it used to, at least not right now.
I did want to call out a guest star appearance, which I thought was one of those slightly flabbergasting ones. Nick Bishop, who plays the general here, I only knew as a love interest on one of my favorite spy shows, Covert Affairs, where he's like a hunky, like private military contractor guy. And I'm like, hey, I realized that show was a few years ago, but like they just playing like super old general guy. And I'm like, that is weird. I can't quite take that in.
With his giant mustache.
Yeah, with the giant bushy mustache and the very gray hair. And anyway,
I like the look of him. Like that character read to me like, sure, that's generic top brass, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But it was just it's always weird when you see actors who you're used to having in like one context show up in a completely different context. And you're like, I don't know what's going on.
It's like they're acting.
Exactly. I don't know. What's up with that?
So weird.
Very weird. Don't get acting in my Legends of Tomorrow.
I guess let's do a rating.
No, nothing else. We're good.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's anybody.
I think we're on that.
There's not a lot to say about this one. You know, I wrote the plot down, but I didn't have any other notes to say.
I get you. There was not a lot of standout stuff this week. I think we agree. Yeah. Like this, in some ways, it felt like this premise had a lot more potential. If you sort of say, "Oh, they land in the Cuban Missile Crisis, and there's aliens," you're like, "Oh, all right. That could be fun." But it felt like maybe just a little belabored at this one. So,
I would imagine some of this is chalked up to COVID stuff. I'm sure it's a lot harder to put together a show when you're dealing with a whole bunch of other things. So, I don't want to be too harsh, but again, it's not getting there for me.
Yeah, it's fair enough. All right, John, you want to do a rating then?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a John Jr., I guess. So, you know, I still enjoy it. Like I said, I still enjoy watching it, but I'm hoping that it gets to be a little bit deeper soon.
Guy?
Yeah, John Jr. Just briefly, because somebody asked, rating system. is Biff is good. Biff was a character from season 4 of Arrow, who was a real competent henchman and always fun. And then he gets killed, and then he comes back as a ghost, and then Ollie kills him again. So that's, we just like him for his persistence and his good nature at getting murdered. Next up, in the middle, is John Jr., which was a baby, again, I think, season 4 of Arrow. Used to be Sarah Jr., and Flash goes and messed up the timeline, so Sarah gets turned into John. So if you're sort of bored and middling and you can't bring yourself to hate a baby, John Jr., it's not the baby's fault. It's not the baby's fault, but it's still not right. You know, like this, you know, it's not their fault. They swung and missed for this episode. This episode is definitely a John Jr. And the next level down is an Alex, which is, again, a clipboard carrying guy from Arrow season 4, who is just the most boring milquetoast. just a, like a real sleeper of a human being who gets killed somewhat arbitrarily by anarchy, and that's it. Right. We never check in on him again. Like, yeah. His girlfriend, Thea, just doesn't mention him again. Like, there's no,
sad about it.
It's over.
Even Alex himself is not very sad about it. Yeah. He's like, you know, I just had that coming, I guess.
Yeah. The best part about Alex was the way that Merlin just totally treated him like garbage.
Speaking of season four of Arrow, the guy who plays Castro was in an episode of season four of Arrow.
Yeah.
Obviously not as Castro.
Probably would have been on.
I think he was some Hive henchman or something like that.
So, interestingly, this episode is credited to sole writing credit to Phil Klemmer, who is the showrunner for Legends. But looking back at his previous efforts, he's almost always credited along with another writer. So maybe this is a case where two can be greater than the sum of their parts, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, maybe just need some tempering on that one.
Could also be something that he just had to pick up. Like,
sure. Yeah, that's possible.
You know, all of my writers are assigned to other stuff. Okay, I guess I'll just do this one myself because blah, 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 whatever silly scheduling reason.
Yeah.
Bang it out.
You take what's rough and maybe that they could polish this to get it into a better place, but they didn't. And this is what we got. John Jr.
Yeah, I think I agree with you guys. It's a John Jr. It was fine. It had a couple good moments that I liked, but it's not not what I was hoping for from an episode with this outrageous of a premise. It maybe goes a little too on the outrageous and doesn't quite dial it in a way that resonates with the rest of us. I mean, the most touching moment I think there is in this episode is when Nate and Zari think they're going to die. And they have a moment of like, again, I'm not, depending on how you want to read that, there's multiple ways to read it, but at least it was sort of a like, you know, okay, well, at least we're in this together. But other than that, it felt like it was maybe just a little hollow at times. So it's still not clear to me exactly where this season is going. I think it's always tricky when you split off one of the crew members from the rest, especially when it's your leading cast member. Sarah is a big stabilizing influence on this show, and not having her around is, I think, it's supposed to make everything feel unsettled. And I think Ava is still a great character in her own right, but it definitely unbalances the dynamics of the cast. Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully this is not like, this is not a too long now from now that we spend like getting back. And I will note that next week's episode, The Satanist's Apprentice, is directed by Katie Lotz. So she may or may not be in it prominently.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this season in Apple TV app. Each of the episodes has like a little description of what happens during the episode. This one, I'll just read the description out in full. This week, an all new episode of DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Ooh.
That's it.
Ooh,
that's it.
Teaser.
Meet the legends with Spooner on board. Ava hopes that her special abilities will blah blah. Like each of them have a good, legit description, and this one is like, just add a blurb. Just put the most basic blurb because.
Well, I wonder if they backfill those. Like if someone comes in and fills it in after the show airs or something.
We didn't know what it was about.
Yeah, maybe.
But
that would make some sense. But it feels just phoned in, which,
All right. Well, we'll put paid to that, dust ourselves off. Shall we do a little bit of a superhero sweep?
Yeah, let's hit it.
All right. I did want to mention before we get into sort of, I think what will be probably the main thing we're discussing this week. Because you guys were mentioned like a couple of the other CW shows and we've talked about ones that we're watching, I did catch up on Supergirl just had its mid-season finale. This is the last season, but I think the back half has been pushed off to like September or something. Again, probably affected a lot by like COVID production schedules and the like. I will say this season has been mainly pretty uninspired. However, I did want to make a call out. There is a two-parter that deals mainly with the characters of Brainy and Nia who have to go back in time. To basically to Kara's high school prom, And that two-parter is actually pretty solid. And I think it helps a lot just shaking up the formula and having two characters who are side characters get sort of the starring roles. And it also brings back the two actresses who play the young versions of Kara and Alex, who are great. They're really, really good. And so having just enough of that mixing stuff up, even though it's still not my favorite show on the CW superhero shows, I thought those two were entertaining in and of themselves. So that was a bright spot in a season that I have found otherwise kind of dull.
That's cool. I should catch up. I know Superman came back too. Superman and Lois.
Yeah,
I haven't caught up on that. Yeah,
I haven't seen that either. Yeah,
I think there was one episode last week, and then there's an episode tonight is the next one. And then I think the one tonight is actually the one David Ramsey directed.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, yeah, he's making the rounds.
Yeah, I was enjoying that. That had a decent mystery sort of thing behind it. Like, you know, weird machinations going on in a small town. Kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I've been enjoying that. It's a good, and it was interesting to read. I was reading a bunch of the David Ramsey interviews that he was doing about sort of coming back into the Arrowverse, and he references it several times about like talking about Superman and Lois in terms of directing it and saying like, I think this is sort of, you know, where all the superhero shows need to go eventually. Like that's sort of the pinnacle, like in terms of like the production and the feeling of it. I think it's an evolution, as we've discussed before, and I think his argument is this is where a lot of these shows, if you want to keep them going, they kind of need to evolve to something a little bit more like this.
Yeah, have fewer of them and take the money and put it into something good.
Yeah, so I mean that, and I would count Stargirl in that mix as well, since it had, I think, a lot of the same, like, more cinematic vibe to it last year.
Yeah.
And clearly bigger budget. And we'll see if that manages to survive when it comes back, which I think is in August.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to feel like they're in a bit of a pickle because they're going up against WandaVision, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, what was the one we just watched?
Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Wow.
Made a big impression on you.
Yeah, really.
Well, it doesn't, I've got Disney Plus open and I'm staring at Star Wars and it is not helping me figure out what the heck I was watching. Yeah, Falcon, like, those are really high quality shows.
Yeah, right. I mean, those are almost indistinguishable from movie shows, right?
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like the making of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that seemed like a giant logistical thing to try to pull off.
It's tough when you're, I mean, Disney budget versus CW budget, very different, right? Like we're talking probably like order of magnitude difference.
Yeah, but at some point, you know, people are going to compare superhero shows and sort of fairly, you know? So I think you're going to have to get creative with where your money goes. For the CW shows.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I mean, I think that's one reason we saw, as of this recording anyways, the Black Lightning spinoff Painkiller was not picked up by the CW. And as Black Lightning ended, I believe this very week, Supergirl, as I said before, is in its last season, which leaves Batwoman and the Flash as sort of two of the, and Legends as the, like, quote-unquote old guard,
right?
You know, in terms of like the older shows, and then there's that, as we I think also discussed in our chat, Naomi, which is produced by Ava DuVernay among others, is scheduled to debut this fall, and I'm curious to see whether that's more of a Stargirl looking show or more of a, you know, Batwoman Legends of Tomorrow looking show.
Well, with Ava DuVernay attached, I would guess that they're going to put some money behind that thing.
I would hope so, because I mean, I think that's, again, it's the way things need to go. I think honestly what this leaves me feeling like is it's time to kill the Flash. That show has definitely worn out its welcome. It's losing a couple of its major cast members at the end, or like basically now-ish.
Well, now for sure, because if you've seen them act, they are basically just phoning it in.
Well, I meant a couple of them are leaving, so, you know, they'll have to adjust to that. But also, it just feels like, you know, it's tough. Seven seasons, as we know from watching things like TNG and DS9, like, you can work on seven seasons, but it gets harder the longer you go on.
Right.
Especially with a show like this.
Season 7 TNG was, like, hit, like, some good and some that were just... Real stickers,
and I think it's just hard to, you know,
some of my best, my favorite, it's hard to keep the momentum. I mean, like, going. One or two, like, are like the one with Worf hopping
parallel
realities.
I absolutely love that. I will watch that again anytime.
Yeah, and me too. He's got his birthday cake and he's cutting it with a bat left or something.
It's just a big so knife. It's not only it's a bat left.
I thought, look, it's his battly knife, isn't it? Anyway, whatever. We're having more fun talking about Star Trek.
Anyway, let's talk about something more interesting. The Eternals teaser dropped this week, which is the first. We saw like a super brief glimpse in like a kind of a sizzle reel type package. But this is our first real look at the Eternals. And it's like a lot. It's like a 2+ minute teaser. And I have no freaking clue what this movie's about.
Yeah. Looks beautiful.
It looks gorgeous. As expected from Chloe Zhao. But like, I don't know enough about the Eternals, and I'm not sure that I'm going to do any of the homework before this movie, because I feel like I will probably just get disappointed.
Yeah, I started reading that whatever that run was that was from like 20 years ago or something like that.
The Neil Gaiman one.
And I just didn't get into it. I mean, it wasn't hitting me, and so I stopped.
There's some classes of characters that I just kind of don't care about, like New Gods.
I mean, Eternals, these are both. Those are both Jack Kirby too, right? It was the sort of
Galactus and the Silver Surfer. Kind of don't care about that either.
I care about the Silver Surfer. I've read a bunch of Silver Surfer.
Well, I have watched that movie.
I watched it like within the last week or so.
It's so bad. I don't know if you want to hijack it and talk about Silver Surfer for a second. We're talking about the follow up to the Fantastic Four.
The one with Jessica Alba.
There's fun parts. Like we were saying in the chat, they really mistreat Jessica.
Oh yeah, yeah, just relentlessly. And it's just so bad and ham-fisted. It's awful. It's like, you know, they do a new joke every, you know, both. There's two movies and there's two new jokes in there where she, you know, disappears and somehow loses her clothes and then reappears.
Oof. It's just the most boring. Yeah. It's just boring.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, whatever.
It's like, it's bad enough to do it once and then you do it again in the movie after. You're like, what are you doing?
I could see you write it, you do the gag, you know, you get the movie in the can, and then when you watch it back, you're like, you know what? This was a cheap, crappy joke. We should not do that again.
Yeah.
And then to just immediately go back and do basically the exact same gag. It's like so boring.
It's fine, guys. They're going to get a third bite of the apple with that one, since they've tried at least twice before to make some Fantastic Four movies work.
I doubt they'll do that joke again.
Probably not.
I mean, the MCU is very asexual.
This is true.
Or, I don't know if that's the correct way of describing it.
Yeah, not hypersexual for sure.
Like, everybody's beautiful, but nobody's horny.
There was an article about this recently. You know, I understand the premise of that. I'm not sure it's something that I personally agree with, and I understand why it is the way that it is. I don't know. I think that's a bigger issue, but it's not potentially that I really think needs solving, but that's just me.
Well, no, I definitely. I mean, I think the most salacious thing we see is the very first one where Tony is getting it on.
The reporter
lady. And he's like the Playboy guy.
And that's almost everyone.
And after that, he's just very committed to Pepper the whole time.
Yes and no. I mean, I rewatched Iron Man 3 recently because my wife hadn't seen it. And there's still a lot
He jokes around with the woman is like attacking him, right?
There's the bit with Rebecca Hall, who is sort of the scientist that in the past he slept with. There's also the giant rabbit that he buys Pepper that's like somewhat suggestive. It's very strange. I don't entirely understand. In Iron Man 2, obviously, there's the Scarlett Johansson stuff, too, which is not some of their finest hours. They swerved away from that, and you can make the argument that they overcorrected, but they've also still focused heavily on, like, I think romance, admittedly a sexless romance over that, but I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, honestly.
No, but, the romance is good, like Peggy and
Peggy Cap. And Cap.
It's great, you know? Yeah. Even... They didn't develop it, but even Scarlett Johansson and Bruce Banner, I love that I'm randomly picking actor names versus character
names. Those are their names. Natasha. Those are their names, yeah. Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, yeah. Natasha and Bruce have kind of a romance-ish sort of connection. Like, certainly in Age of Ultron, they have a conversation about running away together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Clint is happily married to Guy's, the love of Guy's life.
Yeah. Well, that's in the negative column. Yeah. Linda Cardellini. That guy stole my girl.
Wanda and Vision. Yeah. I mean, you have romance examples. I think they just don't go into, you know, the sort of, they keep it right around the PG-13 territory.
Yeah, yeah. And which honestly, is fine. I really don't need to see them getting it on.
Yeah, having just watched a movie from the 80s the other night, which opened with a gratuitous nude scene, I feel like, you know what? In some ways, we have evolved. And in some ways, we are definitely more uptight about a lot of these things. And those two things, I don't know if they quite go hand in hand, but like, there's definitely some overlap there.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Anything else to say about the Eternals? I'm excited. It looks cool. I would love to get a little bit more of the idea of the plot. Even though
I don't really care about the characters, like I never have cared about the characters, I'm still very interested in seeing the movie. It looks stunning. The cast is amazing and the director is amazing. So it seems like if it's going to be crappy, it's got a very good chance of not being crappy.
Yeah. It's going to have to work. Exactly. Crappy.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's always the argument of like, I don't know these characters, I don't care about these characters, but the MCU versions of characters are different from the comic book versions, right? Like, I didn't care about the Guardians of the Galaxy before those movies either.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And so my understanding is that the Celestials, of which Ego is, he says he's the last one, but I don't know. He's kind of a liar.
So. Yeah, right. You don't know.
So the Celestials created the Eternals and the Deviants. Right. And the Deviants are, I don't know, the Celestials, the Eternals are like Gilgamesh and like the basis of our modern myths, whereas the Deviants are the basis of our myths of monsters and stuff, is my broad understanding of it. That's a lot to stick in a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of characters. There's a lot going on. Yeah. And there's some weird, confusing stuff. Like, okay, these Celestials created these Eternals. Like, you're already two steps removed from Peter Parker. Or, like, guy makes a fancy Iron Man suit and zaps terrorists. You know, like, you're...
It's a higher level. Yeah, like,
there's... Yeah, you're playing with, like, really trippy stuff here.
Yeah, I mean, and it's... It's interesting because they go out of their way in the trailer to have that button on the end that directly references the rest of the MCU.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting move because they want you to remember this is still about those characters you love, which I think is interesting because there is a pretty open question of how do these interact. And there's a lot of people talking about the trailer where it's like, you know, we don't interfere kind of with people. Although everyone's like, well, you kind of helped everyone out. That's kind of interfering, isn't it?
Yeah.
And now, of course, you have the issues of like, well, why didn't you show up when Thanos was here? Like, what is your job? What do you guys do?
Yeah. I think at some point we're going to have to get over that where were you when Thanos was here thing. Because eventually, Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
What are you going to do with that?
Well, either it depends how they interact, right? Like, there might be, I mean, multiverses, time travel, who knows? You know,
yeah, there's yeah. I think it's the same question with a few years behind us, whether it's Thanos or not.
It's like, you know, where were the rest of the Avengers when Cap was taking on Hydra? You know, when the events of Winter Soldier were happening? I mean, like he doesn't call Tony for help. He decides he's going to take over. You know, he's going to take down S.H.I.E.L.D. by himself. Does that make sense?
And he and Tony were friends at the time.
Friends enough. You'd think that he would know that Tony would not like the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. was, you know, lousy with Hydra agents.
No, he'd be pissed. Yeah. Well, they do it less in the MCU, but like that, a big chunk of Tony's character in the comics is going after tech that's being misused,
right.
Yeah, they definitely could have tied Tony in there. Like, oh, they're using your repulsors to lift these things up and they're going to kill everybody.
He'd be
right pissed about that.
I mean, and I think what's also interesting about this potential movie is that it's one of the few like ensemble movies where I mean, you had the Avengers, but that was an ensemble built of people who had mostly had their own movies. Whereas with this, you have an ensemble that's delivered sort of ready packaged. Now, they did that with Guardians, too, I think. But I'm even that had tie-ins to some other stuff. And it kind of works as like a sci-fi, you know, adventure movie on its own. This is interesting because it's like, again, I really don't know what the deal is. It's aliens who came to Earth and helped out people and... Yeah. Inspired everyone. But I will say there is I think Kumail Nanjiani's character is like a Bollywood actor.
Yeah.
And that looks great. I don't know. I think it looks fantastic and I love him. He's fantastic. Yeah. So I will, you know, 100% in for this. I just have no idea what it's about.
Right. Yeah. And Angelina Jolie, Salma Hayek.
Yeah. I mean,
the cast has been at it.
Both Jon Snow and Rob Stark. Right. Jeez.
Right.
You're lousy with them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's a lot. Like, any of these people could headline their own movie, right. I would think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just I don't know. I'm curious to see how they fit it all together.
Yeah. Agreed. Anything else you guys want to mention?
I watched the first episode of MODOK.
Ah, how was that? Oh.
It was entertaining. They lean heavily on, like, the you know, so it's claymation... basically, mm-hmm. and they lean heavily on lots of things getting hit by lasers and then blood spurting everywhere. It's a little over the top. I might try another episode just to see if it keeps going in the same vein, but it's not. It's a little too, like, we're being funny by being gross. It might appeal to some people. It wasn't exactly what I like that much, so.
Okay, all right. I went back and watched, I had like 5 or 6 episodes left of Young Justice season 3 and realized it's now on HBO Max because of the whole like DCU thing flopping and then being absorbed. So I was like, I can actually watch it in like a streaming service I have now instead of some copies that got heisted off a truck.
And those were real bad copies too.
They were not.
I felt bad. I should have put them back on the truck. That's what I should have done. But...
just for safety.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyways, I watched a couple of those, and I think it's just I loved the first 2 seasons of that show. The third season is definitely a little more meandering, and I think one of the struggles is they try to sort of evolve all the characters, and so they constantly bring in new characters, and it's harder for me to feel like. As invested in those new characters as I do in sort of the people who we've been with through the entire series.
In fairness, they did switch it up between seasons 1 and 2, right?
Yes.
Like Robin becomes Nightwing. Like he's all grown up. It's like 5 years later or something. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then season 2 jumps even further. So like the Outsiders is like even like a splinter group from like the Young Justice team. Right. And there's like a whole separate thing going on there. And it's like, you know, and I finally getting to the end, I was like, all right, stuff is sort of coming to a head, which seems interesting. But I'm going to finish it out because I've only got like 3 episodes left now, but it's not my favorite of those seasons. I think season 2 for me was a real highlight.
Season 2 was great. That was the one with the Reach, right?
The light, I think, right?
The light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. The Reach is the name of the aliens.
The aliens. Yes. Yeah. Anyways, so keep going with it. All right. Do we have any, I don't know if we have any letters to address this week.
We don't have to ask Freddy.
Yeah, we should remind our listeners out there 2 things. One, send in your letters, biff@theincomparable.com or @biffcast on Twitter. We like your letters. We'll read them on the show. We'll answer your questions. Pretty much anything, honestly. I mean, preferably superhero like related, but yeah. And John has a very important announcement that he'd like to share with you.
If you have forgotten, because you haven't been reading the transcripts carefully, we are selling shirts. So go to cottonbureau.com and search for TVA, where you will find our fine Time Variance Authority t-shirt. And as I've said, I have mine, and it looks fantastic. I wear it probably too much, and you can do the same. So if you buy one, you're helping us out and supporting the show, and we would appreciate it.
All right. Well, that is all we got time for this week. I'd like to, of course, as always, thank my co-host for being here. John Moltz, always a pleasure.
It's pronounced nuclear.
Oh, thank you. That was bugging me so much. He's so educated. And yeah.
Yes.
Nuclear. Guy English, thank you for being here.
It's gummy time, babies. Take a puff and have a good
night. Oh, no, it's back. I can't escape it. Thank you, everybody out there, for reading the transcripts and supporting the show. We'll see you next week.